Apes and Scouts, a podcast where two friends review every single movie they watch.
Well, hello, everybody. How are you?
Hi.
You all right over there, Max?
Yes.
You seem very to the point today.
Somebody dropped the C word before the episode started.
Oh, the C word.
The C word.
Oh, my goodness. What word is that?
I can't bring myself to say it.
Oh.
But it's the name of our editor.
Oh.
Spanish for more.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Chris Moss.
Yeah, that was me. I did that.
You said that word, yeah.
Listen, I'm sorry. I watched Christmas movies.
Oof.
And now is the time. This mid-March is the winter of our discontent.
It really is the winter of our discontent. The winter of our disco tent.
We have a disco tent.
The disco tent.
And then just like ABBA. We are Dancing Queens. We should mention, Tapes and Scowls Classic will be coming shortly.
Tapes and Scowls Classic? What the hell is that?
That means I got all the old episodes and I'm going to re-release them on this feed so you can listen to every review we've ever done.
A true Chris Moss.
That's right.
Bien.
Odele. So, I guess since we're talking about Christmas, I'll kick it off, because I'm the one with the Christmas movie.
Bien.
Si. Tortuga Grande.
Feliz Navidad.
Yeah. I only know other horrible words, so that's it for me.
That's all the Spanish we know that's not in trouble Spanish.
No trouble Spanish this week.
That's right. We get into Tim's litany of nicknames.
Pero. My first movie is Dear Santa.
Dear Santa.
Dear Santa.
D-E-A-R?
That's the one.
Oh,
I know a Dear Santa would be so cool.
Yeah, that'd be way cooler.
He's like, I'm here for the gifts. But like somebody's in a truck hits him before the season.
That's kind of cool.
And then they eat him.
Or like.
Yeah, and then they gain his power.
Maybe it's like a scientific child genius who learns there is no Santa.
Okay.
And so he attempts to make Santa from like deer DNA, and it's this weird Santa reindeer hybrid.
Ooh.
And it's like a monster movie.
I'll fill you full of cheer.
There you go. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
And it's like up on the rooftop, and it's super sinister, like this pounding on the rooftop. And it's like, oh no, oh no.
We should make Christmas movies.
Yeah.
That should be what we specifically do, because I know Sam loves Christmas movies.
She does, and I'd like to ruin them just a little bit.
I'd like to ruin them a lot. I mean, like making bad movies.
Oh, me too. Bad movies, great idea.
Yeah.
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 High concept, terrible films.
That's our motto.
Tapes and Scowls Productions.
Tapes and Scowls Productions, a Superliminal Films joint.
Yeah.
Probably make more money if we just made Superliminal Film joints.
Yes, lots more money.
Lots more money. Dear Santa from 2024. I watched this on the 20th of December, an appropriate time to be watching this.
Mm-hmm.
It is an hour 47. Look at all these genres. It is a holiday comedy, a dark comedy, a regular-ass comedy, a fantasy, a dark fantasy, a holiday, a high-concept comedy.
That's a lot of writing.
Calm
you did for that.
The fuck down, IMDb.
Yeah, holy shit.
You got in the nog again. Holy hell. Your director is Bobby Farrelly, who you would know from largely stupid movies.
Okay.
So this is right on brand.
Fair enough.
Very known for Dumb and Dumber, There's Something About Mary. He did Osmosis Jones. He did Kingpin. He did Three Stooges. Like, he knows dumb.
Yeah, half the Farrelly brothers.
If you need things to be dumb, he got you.
Yeah, Kingpin, one of my favorite Farrelly brothers.
I know you like that one. That's why I included it. Your cast, Jack Black, Robert Timothy Smith, Keegan-Michael Keel, Post Malone, Jaden Carson Baker, and Kai Chech, I'm going to guess.
Hi, Kai.
Hi, Kai. Additional crew, Ricky Blitt, one of the writers, worked on Family Guy, so he's also a good one to have on a movie like this.
I like it.
Yeah. Your movie summary, when a young boy mails his Christmas list to Santa with one crucial spelling error, a devilish Jack Black arrives to wreak havoc on the holidays.
Dear Satan.
He sends his Christmas letter to Satan because he's dyslexic.
I love it.
Simple.
It's cruel and funny.
It is. This movie's batshit crazy.
The premise alone makes it sound like it should be.
I don't know if this is for kids or adults.
That's interesting.
It's a little weird for adults, but it's also like way too strong for kids.
Okay.
I don't know. And the kid actors are great.
Awesome.
They are fantastic. They do a great job. Post Malone is hilarious. He plays himself.
Oh, that's great.
Basically, when Jack Black appears, he's like, hey, listen, you got three wishes, and then I get your soul. And he's like, Santa, why would you want my soul? Like, he's stupid, this kid. He doesn't understand that this
right.
is not Santa. And He's like, three wishes? What are you, a genie? He goes, they stole that shit from me. And like, that's there's awesome. A lot of that kind of stuff in this movie. Stupid genies. He's like, but you got three wishes. Just go for it. And like, the kid is genuinely a good kid.
Right.
Kind-hearted. And like, all his wishes are like, even if they're a little bit for him, like he wants a chance to go on a date with a girl.
Okay.
And it's like, he's not even just saying make the girl my girlfriend. He's like, I just want to go on a date with her.
Yeah.
Maybe I have a shot if she can see me for what I am.
Sure.
Because he kind of fumbles it early.
Okay.
And Jack Black's like, well, that's kind of for you. Like, he kind of gets on him like, you're kind of doing a shitty thing, aren't you? She has no free will in this. He's like, well, yeah, but, you know, I'm not forcing her to do anything. Yes, you are. So it's like kind of like that.
That's cool.
He has the best friend who like has awful teeth, the worst teeth.
Okay.
And he does, one of his wishes ends up being fixing his teeth.
Oh, cool.
And like, I like that the kid gets like more popular and things once his teeth get fixed. And like, they have this kind of moment where they're not friends. Like, they get mad at each other.
Okay.
And there's this great moment where they make up and he's like, well, what are you going to do? You clearly wasted a wish on my teeth. And he goes, you knew? He goes, I didn't think, I just woke up and my teeth were amazing, you idiot.
That's great.
So like, there's like little things, and to hear young kids delivering these lines is really funny.
That's awesome. Kudos to them for doing it well too, because that's an interesting bit of business to have to kind of grok as a child.
It's good.
That's fun.
Keegan-Michael Keel plays the psychiatrist because the parents are worried about him. The parents are fighting. They're heading towards divorce. It does have an element of tragedy because you find out he had a little brother who passed in an accident. So like, they're always fighting because of that.
Sure.
They're not getting along because of the tragedy. The kid's trying to like save Christmas. The mom loves Christmas and the dad's just like really beat down at this point. And it's like bad. But there is a lot of cool moments. The Post Malone stuff is hilarious. He ends up taking her on the date to see Post Malone, which like Jack Black's like, let's just go to Post Malone. I'll get you in there. And he's like clearly just manipulating Post Malone.
Right.
Post Malone's like, let's go backstage. Yo, what's up? Let's go.
That's
awesome. You're my man. And he has him on stage like dancing and stuff.
Wow.
But what happens is the kid goes viral. And this is how the parents start believing all the weird shit he's saying.
Amazing.
Because they're like, yeah, your son's awesome. Did you not see he has like a billion views on YouTube? He's Post Malone's friend. They're like, I thought he was full of shit. He said he was friends with Post Malone.
That's awesome.
It's good. It's largely a vehicle for Jack Black, though. It hits sometimes, it misses other times. And it's very dark and weird. And it has good payoffs. It's just the journey is a little bumpy.
Okay.
So this won't be for everybody. And you really should probably watch it before you let your kids watch it.
Yeah, that's a
good
call.
The one thing I will say.
Good call.
But I think it's a pretty solid movie.
So, nice.
IMDb, they disagree. They gave it a 5.4.
Okay.
Rotten Tomato critics hate this shit. 24%.
Holy cow.
Out of 21 critics. The audience score, which was 500 plus, gave it 39%.
Wow.
Yes. Does have a wife score. Who do you think liked this more, me or the wife?
Oof.
Haven't done this in a second.
No, and it's tough when it comes to you with a wife in comedy films.
Yes.
That's really tough.
It can be.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the wife by 0.5 point.
God damn, you got it.
Shit.
My wife gave this a 7, and I gave it a 6.5.
Nice.
It's my kind of humor.
Very cool.
Yep.
That's way
good work.
Nice.
But what you got?
100% accuracy this episode.
Yeah.
I love it.
Just don't ask me any questions, and we got it.
So the Christmas movie I was most excited for this year was the new Nosferatu.
Hey, there you go.
So in order to watch the Nosferatu new one, the Robert Eggers one, I needed Sam to watch the other Nosferatuses.
Oh, okay.
So we have not yet watched the original Nosferatu, but I did sucker her into 1979's Nosferatu the Vampire.
There it is. Okay.
We watched this on November 29th of 2024. It is 1 hour 47 minutes. It is a horror of the dramatic ass variety.
For sure.
And this was directed by the infamous Werner Herzog, and it stars the even more infamous Klaus Kinski with Isabella Ajani on there and Bruno Gans.
Wow, Gans.
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 This was also written by Herzog, and he really wanted to get more of the actual Dracula novel into Nosferatu. Because if you're not familiar, Nosferatu is a German film that is Dracula, but they didn't want to pay for the rights, so it's Nosferatu. It's Count Orlok, not Count Dracula, and there's a bunch of little changes of the characters' names, but the basic plot, for the most part, is the same with some differences in how the vampire is vanquished. So the summary for this one is Count Dracula, important change there, back to the original, moves from Transylvania to Wismar, Great, because it's German. Spreading the Black Plague across the land.
As one does.
Only a woman of pure heart can bring an end to his reign of horror.
Seems like we're going to have a reign of horror.
Yeah, and this follows the Nosferatu story. It's the female character that is able to undo the vampire. It's not all of the male characters coming to her aid like in the original novel, which I think is a nice touch, especially for the original. It's 1922, I believe.
Something like that,
yeah,
yes.
So like having that, kind of like the female is the powerful one. She really is in Nosferatu. I think that's really a nice touch to it. And I like that Herzog kept that concept intact here, but also brought in, like, changed the names back to Mina and Jonathan Harker. You got Van Helsing. But they're, like, less useful. Like, Van Helsing is there to kind of just simply identify that Count Dracula is, in fact, a vampire. As a basically all he accomplishes.
Right.
Because he's just an occultist, essentially. He's not like what we would come to see, like Christopher Lee, as more in that era of the Hammer horror films. We wouldn't come to see that kind of concept. We would see more like Van Helsing the hero in the 70s with the British Hammer stuff. Okay. Less so now as more just the like learned scholar who is identifying what the problem is and how it's solved, and a little bit more dark because he's not really saying, like, he knows what's going to happen. He knows what has to happen in order for the vampire to be vanquished, and he knows kind of that Mina knows.
Right.
But he's not going to say anything to Jonathan or make that kind of known to anybody but himself.
Why would you?
Because he knows it's less of a chance it's going to actually happen. It's like, this sucks, but I kind of know what's got to go down here. So I liked that part of it. I think this movie is just fantastically moody, and it works so well watching these like beautiful travel bits where Jonathan's heading to Transylvania, and then like he encounters the gypsies, and once he kind of mentions where he's going, like everything just is like, are you for real? Like, the mood just drops out of the movie. It's just like, it becomes so dark and tense, and really just, it's like they just know they're seeing a man who's about to die. Like, it's crazy. He's like, I don't understand. Like, can you help me? And they're like, no, we can't help you. You're cursed.
Yeah.
Get out. Like, take this amulet. Get out. And like, he wakes up in the morning, they're all gone. And he's just like, was this a dream? Was this not a dream? What the hell happened? Like, I swore there was like a small town's worth of people here.
Right.
And it's just now me abandoned in a bed. But like, the amulet's there. So he's like, what's going on? Like, it's so tense and scary. Klaus Kinski, completely manic human being, right? Mm. And just lends itself perfectly to being the titular vampire character here. Really scary. His movements and like his looks and everything, he's so tense. Tense and frightening.
Frightening.
Very so scary in this movie. Yeah. It's like really off-putting, and he's powerful, and he doesn't do what some of the other Nosferatus do, and it's just the presence is so staggering. Like, he doesn't have that Max Schreck, like, wide-eyed, like, just, he knows how scary he looks. Like, Max Schreck, perfect in the makeup. Like, use the makeup perfectly to accentuate the performance. Klaus Kinski's, like, owning the makeup with his performance, if that makes any sense.
I think so.
Like, yeah. His mannerisms make it scary. It could just be Klaus Kinski in no makeup whatsoever doing what he's doing, and it would be
scary.
Alarming. Yeah.
That, like, may be true. Yeah. I could see that.
And it's just him in most of his roles. It's just this very, like, unsettling individual.
Right.
Worked really well for the parts he was cast in, I think. All the plague stuff towards the end of the movie is really, really messed up. It's visceral. It's nasty. It's just watching the town go to hell because people are dying in the streets and people are flipping out and just turning on each other. Like, coming out of watching this movie now, post-pandemic, it's like oddly poignant. Like,
sure.
Where it's just like in a moment, it can, like, a switch can flip and everybody's enemy, and just there's confusion, fear, terror, concern. Like, it's just manic and chaotic. And it's, I think he handles all of those things very well. And those are obviously at the forefront. And I think one of the big gripes people would have of going back to this movie is that mood and tension and tone is what Herzog was focusing on. And I think that makes sense, right? Because he's basing it on a German expressionist film from the 20s.
Right.
But if you're going into this movie looking for a plot-driven, very focused, story-told film, you're not going to get it.
Right.
Much more auteur, much more focused on building mood, tension, and atmosphere, less worried about a plot-driven narrative, right? This is simply Dracula wants to infect another nation with his presence. That's it. Yeah. And he travels there to do it. Man come to get him. Things go bad for man. Sure. Man go back. Dracula follow him. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the story. There's not much to it.
No, and that's terrifying enough, really.
It is. It's just scary. Like, what Dracula represents in the era he represented it in the original novel, it carries a lot of weight. And I think that there's a lot of historical reference and a lot of things that Herzog gets right and really puts on showcase for the viewer in this movie versus, let me just, you know, set... It's a lot different than like the Francis Ford Coppola Dracula, where it's much more plot driven. We're using the backdrop is scary and unsettling, but it's beautiful and gothic at the same time. We're eschewing a lot of that. We're getting rid of the Universal Studios style look to it, and it's much more awful.
Right.
And I like that kind of concept to it. I mean, even the vampire himself looks much more intimidating than the like Universal style classic Dracula, the Bela Lugosi we're all used to seeing.
Right.
You get a much more stark, makeup-driven, scary-looking vampire.
That Dracula is way gaudy compared to this one.
Yeah, right. He looks like a beautiful man.
Right.
With occasionally a demonic-looking set of teeth, where this is just something that was maybe human at a point.
Who originally made that decision to make it look that way, anyways, is the question.
I know that they chose to use that look based on the stage production that he was doing at the time. So I know Bela Lugosi was doing the stage adaptation of Dracula, and he was just, because that was the air of him luring you, right? Like that was the lure was the...
Well, yeah, and it makes sense to have like this man looks like he's trustworthy. He's not.
Right.
Like
this, very this charming guy, and charismatic. He's charming.
He seems upper echelon kind of dude.
Right. Right. Exactly. This like lovely, handsome aristocrat who's very charming and proper. Like this is... Like, of course he would be able to woo a woman very easily and talk to kind of build up a man's ego, but then immediately
murder
him. Lose that facade and show them what he's really at the core of himself, where this eschews that and it just puts it on visual display of this is a creature of pure terror and evil, and just unabashedly so. It brings with it horrors that you can't imagine.
I cannot.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Really cool. Definitely slower plot, an hour 47 for such a thin plot.
Right.
You're spending a lot of time looking at visuals, what's going on, watching characters kind of unravel, taking a lot of time to get where we all know. Because vampires are so driven into the modern pop culture zeitgeist that it's like you could ask, you know, a first grader Count Dracula, they know what Count Dracula is.
Which is kind of cool when you think about it.
Yeah. It's just, you mean it doesn't take but a moment. So taking all that time to set it up is a little like, I get you have to for the sake of the story, but you don't have to at the same time because it's just dragging things out. But when you handle it as well as Herzog does, it doesn't feel like it drags. It feels like there's a mood and a tension and an atmosphere he's trying to build, and it works for me. Nice. But it won't work for everybody for sure. IMDb gives it a 7.4 out of 10.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes critics, 67 critics reviewed this one to 94%.
Wow.
The audience of 10,000 plus gave it an 83%.
Nice.
I gave this film an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
Sam says, you was wrong. 4 out of 10, she says. But it makes sense. This is very much not Sam's modern movie aesthetic.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I wonder if this movie's score changed recently with people going back to watch the old one.
It's a good question. I was one that it was like kind of interesting to be like, I wonder if this will kind of land on people's radars now, because there's also Shadow of the Vampire, the original, this new one. So now we have like 4 iterations of this like Orlok style character to look at. Pretty awesome.
Pretty cool.
Blah.